You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by 2020. You know that stock photography look you hate? Like how all the models have those creepy, dead-behind-the-eyes smiles? 2020 lets you buy millions of intimate, authentic, real-world photos. They look like they came from someone's social media account you're jealous of, and they're proven to increase your brand's image. You get 5 photos with 2020's 1-week free trial at 2020.com/onbrand. That's the word 20, then the number 2 and the number 0.com/onbrand to get your first 5 photos free.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Kay Putnam. Kay is a psychology-driven brand strategist for entrepreneurs. Through work with hundreds of clients from global brands to solo business owners, she developed the Clarity Code. She believes in pursuing audacious dreams and that there is genius that lives inside every entrepreneur. When you have a clear brand your clients love, respect, and are willing to pay premium prices for, it gives you the clarity and confidence to scale your impact and income. She works with students in her brand new brand incubation program and with new clients one-on-one. When she's not transforming brands, she's exploring the world with her husband and 2 little ones. They love eating their way across their home of Naples, Italy. She's been interviewed on the Strategy Hour, Jumble Think, Being Freelance, and now the On Brand podcast. Kay, welcome to On Brand.
It is such an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And I would just say that after reading that bio, I think most of us now wish that we were all eating our way across Naples, Italy. Unless there is that minority out there that is doing that at this very moment, most of us have earbuds on and are listening to a podcast on branding.
We are very, very blessed. We've been there for about 2 years now, and I have been taking full advantage of all of the eating opportunities.
And I'll also say that speaking to someone who one of their brands is the brand new brand incubation program, and I have a book coming out called Brand Now. So I've got Brand New and Brand Now. And then you are a psychology-driven brand strategist, and I am a brand strategist for brand-driven digital. There's all sorts of words that are too similar, and I'm not sure I've had enough coffee to get through all of those correctly. So I'm going to reward myself for getting through your bio.
I know. Fantastic job. I have to say, listening to all of your previous podcast episodes, I think your guests have the best bios in all of podcast land. So I feel like I need to go back and take notes because I'm duly impressed by all of your guest bios.
I feel like as a brand strategist going out of the gate, you're already applying your insights to the On Brand podcast by giving me a new positioning I had not previously thought about. And that is that we have the best, only the finest guest bios here on the On Brand podcast. So I did my undergrad work in psychology and also theater arts, and I usually make the joke that between psychology and theater, you have the right background for branding. So I know enough to be dangerous, but I was really excited to talk to you about being a psychology-driven brand strategist. So how do you bring that to bear in the work that you do with brands?
Yeah, so I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and there's a misconception that branding equals design, especially in the world of smaller businesses. So that is a key positioning statement for me, because I want to let people know right off the start that it's so much deeper than that. It's so much more than a logo or a color palette or fonts. Your brand is the belief that people have about you. It's your soul. It's your heart. It's the way that you impact the world. And I was, so my degree is in marketing. So I started from that point of view, and I had a minor in psychology. And in my early career days, I was approaching everything looking at it like it was a marketing problem. So I'm like, okay, where can we get more impressions? Where can we reach more people? How can we get in front of more people? And then sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. So I knew that there was something bigger at play. So I had to really stop looking at everything from the marketing point of view, like a strictly marketing point of view, and look at what was beneath the surface. And that's where I landed in the world of branding squarely. And to me, it's really a study of human behavior, how people interact with businesses. And that is all driven by psychology. So it's a natural fit for me. Now, when I was getting started, I, in like this total serendipitous rabbit trail of internet links, I happened on a website that described the 12 brand archetypes that I now know were originally defined by Carol S. Pearson and Margaret Mark in their book about archetypes. But it originally comes from Carl Jung, who's a psychologist, and then even before that, Plato's Forms. But the interesting thing when I discovered these brand archetypes is I could suddenly see beneath the surface. So I suddenly knew what was going on, why some marketing was working for some companies and why others was falling really flat and not getting the ROI that people wanted. And since then, I've been helping entrepreneurs and small businesses apply these brand archetypes, which are based in psychology, human desires, values, to reach their clients on an emotional, psychological level as opposed to a surface level place.
That is so interesting. And I think, you know, the archetypes going all the way back to Jung and Plato are powerful. So what are some of the more common archetypes that we see at play in the brands around us?
Archetypes are fun because once you're tuned into them, you start to see them everywhere, like walking through the grocery store or through the mall, watching Super Bowl commercials. Some common ones that will probably start this pattern recognition in people's minds. If you think about Campbell's Soup, they're a classic caregiver archetype. Red Bull is an amazing entertainer archetype. Nike is the hero. Harley Davidson is the maverick. And I could go on. So there's 12 of them. But you see in the strongest brands that we know and love, Apple is primarily magician, you see these patterns showing up again and again because they're part of this like collective unconscious. The way that our brain works, we're constantly putting things in categories and recognizing patterns. So by aligning your brand with one of these patterns we already know exists, you get to tap into things that you already know that people desire, which is really, really fascinating to me.
Well, that's so interesting too, because I talk a lot about being, you know, what it takes to be a standout brand. And I think that these archetypes relate directly to it, because you look at some of those great brands, those storied brands that we know, love, and trust. One of the many things that they're doing is tapping into these archetypes that, you know, if your brand is sitting out there on the shelf in the marketplace and it doesn't really have much of that unique DNA surrounding it, one of the big things you can do is find one of those buckets to put it in, because it communicates that larger meaning. It helps someone determining, oh, I know who you are now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that sense of understanding allows people to build a relationship with you. If you're confusing people in all of your messages, if they're too contradictory, I mean, the confused mind doesn't buy. So people tend to just put that away and focus on something that does appeal to them and that they do understand. So these can be a very powerful filtering device for looking at all of your messages to make sure that you're putting out a consistent and compelling message to the market.
So is step one finding an archetype that fits your ethos, who you are and what you stand for?
Yes, and it's kind of a two-step process, especially depending on how big your business is. So I find that entrepreneurs, like smaller businesses that are driven by a like a personality-driven brand that's like a personal brand or a small agency, a lot of those are driven directly from the founder. So they can take an archetype quiz, they can figure out what their primary and probably their secondary archetype is that they're going to focus on and go from there. Bigger brands have an extra step that they could be a little bit more strategic about it. They can take a look at the rest of the market and see how people are showing up. So for example, like if you're selling ice cream, you have some ice cream brands that are very wholesome and I'm thinking of like Bell's ice cream. I don't know if it's a national brand or not, but it reminds you of like sitting at your grandma's kitchen table. So it gives that personality to the product. Other ice cream brands like Haagen-Dazs have this almost like sensual, like, like enjoy the moment. I can't remember how to pronounce the word, but like just enjoying the pleasure of eating ice cream. So these are two completely different brand personalities, and they help set the products apart in our mind. So you can be strategic about the landscape and make your final decisions based on what's not showing up in your market.
That's fascinating. So with that, you know, one of those two steps or one of those two ways of getting there, what's next in terms of kind of articulating your brand's story?
So first, I think it's a matter of learning everything that you can about that particular pattern. So for example, I'm the magician archetype, and my brand is based around change and transformation and helping people recognize their like inner power to change the world. For me, I'm more concerned about like people's inner genius and unleashing that potential within the different businesses and entrepreneurs that I work with. So it's learning about what that archetype stands for and why people are drawn to it on that deep unconscious level. And then doing an audit of your messages and being honest with yourself. Not every brand isn't going to live within the constraints of their archetype perfectly, but it's a really powerful tool to at least give yourself a filter to make sure that you're not trying to embody all 12 of them in every different message that you're putting out there. Because again, you're going to confuse your clients, you know, put up that barrier to the sale as opposed to just hotwire into that thing that you know that your clients want from you.
That's interesting. I think it's a good point too. And considering, you know, when to be able to deviate from the archetype as well.
Well, and I think that the biggest danger is being generic. So every time that you decide, like say you're setting up your email marketing system and you have a generic join my newsletter call to action, and then the welcome email is completely like it's just the template welcome email that came with your software. Like you're not doing your brand any favors. You're becoming very forgettable. But by applying you know, by telling the story of your archetype. So again, let's just throw another example. So like the Maverick is all about freedom and breaking down the status quo, destroying what's not working to build up something that does. So if you can use some of that language that elicits that emotion in your ideal clients, you become much more memorable and people enjoy working with your brand a lot more.
So you work with entrepreneurs, startups, and, you know, a lot of times you hear startup brands talking about the pivot. So how do you know when it's time for your brand to pivot?
Yeah, super interesting. And I've actually been going through a transition period myself with my own brand. I've worked with a lot of very early stage entrepreneurs in the past, like literally people that are just getting started as an entrepreneur for the first time. And I'm moving into a more advanced market where they've been in business for a while. So this means that things have to change, right? Like my brand has to show up in a more authoritative way. I have to serve these people on the level that they want to be served. I think it's important to pay attention to how your brand is serving your overall strategy during those pivot moments. So anytime you're finding that you're being seen as a commodity in your ideal client's mind, I love the quote by Warren Buffett. He said something like, the single most important element of a business is your pricing power, meaning if you have the ability to command a higher profit margin than your competitors without losing clients, and if that is relatively flexible for you. So like if you could raise your prices without losing clients, that shows you that you have a good business. And to me, that shows you that you have a good brand. So if you're ever in a place where that isn't true, I find it's time to really take a look and, you know, revisit your brand to make sure that you actually are appealing to the people that you want to appeal to.
Yeah, I'm just so sick of Warren Buffett being so damn smart.
And I know.
And I'm a fellow Midwesterner, so he also out Midwests everyone with his simple ways. And I mean, one, you could probably spend a whole half hour podcast episode talking about the Warren Buffett personal brand. But so many of his insights that I see quoted are speak to, I mean, he's not, I mean, obviously he's such a big, a large business leader in terms of his footprint that it steps, you know, beyond any particular bucket. But so many of these that I see, I want to grab onto, like you just didn't say, that's a branding thing, the pricing power, because what he's talking about speaks to the power of your brand. I've used another great quote of his that talks about, I forget what it's something about, I think it's his quote on reputation, that you, it takes years to build and you can destroy it in seconds if you're not careful. And that's another one where I want to jump up on the desk and say, that's a branding thing.
Yeah, as a fellow branding person, I mean, I feel like we're on this crusade to like let people know what they're looking at. Like that's your brand. That's what we do. That's how we help entrepreneurs. We help you shape that perception and shape that reputation. Yeah, you're speaking to the choir.
Well, and I think all of that, you know, both of those Buffett quotes kind of fit into the different ends of what we're talking about, from a pivot, you know, knowing how the brand best serves us, and also making sure that we're not doing that damage that that we could destroy something in seconds too. And I think it's scary kind of getting your mind around the timing of it, the win of a pivot versus, hey, I don't want to accidentally wreck this thing that might be better than I think it is, but my perspective's a little wonky.
Yeah, to me, it's this conversation between brand and marketing. So brand, to me, is a very long-term decision. It's like, where are we going in a couple years from now? Who do we want to be in the future? How can we best serve this world? And I think where people get into trouble is when they focus more on the tactics, so on the stuff that we're doing today and tomorrow and the next 90 days. If those two things don't align, you have the danger of wrecking your business, or of making short-term damage that's going to hold you back from that long-term vision.
Well, and I think that that's why it's so key to have some of those bigger questions, whether it's archetypes, whether it's something that distills who you are and what you stand for, that you can really use as a compass to navigate through some of those moments as well. Because I think without that, like you said, the danger is focusing on those tactics. I think that is a more slippery slope to get into is when you don't have the backup of that compass, that true north that you're following, that says who you are, so you know, okay, this tactic might make some sense to pivot to, or it might seem that, oh, this is diametrically opposed to who we are, we definitely shouldn't go there, or to make people's heads hurt even more, or it could say, you know what, this is maybe something we should start moving towards now, because this is the new version of what we've always been trying to do, but maybe it's been hiding in plain sight.
Exactly. There's a few key questions I love to ask brands when we first start working together. One of them is, what is your brand utopia? So if your brand was able to impact everybody, literally everybody, 100% of the market that could benefit from your services, what would the world look like? How would the world change? How does that make a difference? I think that that's a really great question for like that North Star wayfinding. And then another question I always ask in many different forms, because I think it's one of the most important parts of brand building, is what do you believe? How do you see the world? What do you know for sure is true? Because those end up being your, like, your guideposts or your buoys, if we're going to be driving a boat here towards our future. Where are you going to stay between to make sure that you're reaching that brand utopia in a way that's on brand?
I love questions that you can ask yourself and that clients can ask themselves. I think they're infinitely helpful. And so often you hear what the utopia question is getting at is really, what's your objective? Why are you here? Why do you get out of bed every day? But I think phrasing it on the other side of that question, because when I'm asking about a utopia, that means what's the future state? I think that that's a really neat way to get at it. And what do you believe kind of gives you your belief ecosystem that you're standing in.
Yeah, it allows you to set your brand principles, so you know you can give decision-making tools to your team or for yourself. You know how you can assess the different decisions that come your way. That's really fantastic for what we were just talking about, with knowing what tactics or short-term things to do. I think that asking questions is one of the most important things. One other one that I love to ask my clients is, what is the flip side of your brand beliefs? So after you arrive at those I believe statements, who are your brand enemies? And they don't have to be a competitor. In fact, I often tell people not to focus on a particular competitor, but what ideas are you opposed to? What can you take a stance on? I believe that every brand needs to have a strong opinion and be willing to share it.
Well, I love that point. And, people have talked about, your antithesis who is against what you're out to do. And I like the point too, that it's not just, I like the way you phrased that. Questions are great. There's an infinite number of ways to how to ask them. And asking the flip side, I think, is key, because think about a brand like Starbucks. You know, you might be able to say, okay, their villain, their enemy is, Folgers or another Dunkin' Donuts. But I really think beyond that, it's an ethos question. It's more of your flip side point of, it's anybody who seeks to make enjoying a good cup of coffee unremarkable.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I just paid, it hurt my heart. I paid $8 for an espresso and a cup of, or like a bottle of water when I came into the country from Italy. I'm visiting the US right now. And it hurt my heart. But at the same time, I'm so bought into the Starbucks ethos that I could justify it. I mean, it doesn't really matter that I can get espresso for a euro in Italy. When I'm here and I have the opportunity to buy from Starbucks, I buy into it.
Oh, absolutely. It's just like right now, as we're recording this, I have a busy day of meetings to follow. And I'm thinking about it. I mentioned at the beginning, getting your bio correct. And I might be a quart low on coffee myself. And there's any number of places I could get one quick on the go. But I'm sitting here thinking, I would like a special cup of coffee. I have a busy day. It'd be nice to have a treat. So
yes, and I'm worth it. My work is worth it, and perhaps I'll even stop, you know, and do like the creative laptop lifestyle thing and be seen in that environment. Like it all adds to our identity because these brands have built this story around their brand that we love.
Well, and also you think about standout brands, and I don't want to sound like a motivational speaker, but me personally in my day, I want something special. I want a treat, and I want something that's not just a gross styrofoam cup on the go, any number of places I can find that. And if your brand is sitting in that category to be able to fulfill that bit of mind space, oh, wow, there's something special there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And to make this tactical for the people listening, after you ask yourself these questions, I think it's really important to document them. I think that too many brands live in the intuition or just in the brains of the people building them. And it's really powerful, especially if you're in the space where I work with clients, where you're maybe transitioning from being a small team to a larger team, to really empower all of the people that are working with you to be the brand as well as you can.
That's so key. And from working with the smaller early stage entrepreneurs to brand growth, because that is, it's an inflection point for the business model and everything else there, but it's also an inflection point for the brand. And if more people know how to be the brand, it's going to grow with you instead of being a stumbling point along the way.
Yes, or a hodgepodge of ideas. Hot Mess Express.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, someone hops on and thinks, oh, there's not a brand because they didn't see anything documented. And then they come up with something that is close but is off, and then you've got a disconnect there. So documentation, it does nothing to answer those questions if you aren't documenting them.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, as we start to wrap things up, and especially timely, this is one of the smoother segues to this question, and we talk about coffees making our day special, all these different ways that brands can make us smile. What is a brand that has made you smile recently?
So I knew
beyond,
you were going
beyond,
to...
Beyond your airport espresso.
Yeah, exactly. I knew you were going to ask this question, of course, because you ask all of your guests, and originally I was going to... highlight the amazing brand Brit and Co, which is a media brand. I've actually written about them and analyzed their brand. But this morning, and this is probably way too much information, but I was going to the bathroom and I was looking at a product that my friend has here at her house called Poo-Pourri.
Yes.
Have you heard of them?
We had their founder on this podcast a couple of years ago. Great brand.
Amazing brand. And they even call out right on their back of the packaging that they're a mix between the king and the jester. And their copywriting is so on point.
Oh.
Yes, that was a brand that truly made me smile here just in the last 24 hours.
And I will link up to that episode here in this episode. But they are really complimentary ideas. And everything that Kay has talked about, from answering those questions to... you know, what your brand utopia is to, you know, what you believe, what the flip side to that is, having that documented, which they've done in some unique ways. It's that is a brand who is walking the talk that we just spent the last half hour having. Okay, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
I'm at kputnam.com, and I do have a brand archetype quiz right on my site. So if after listening to this conversation, you're curious about where you land, you can take that quiz for free and find out.
That is awesome and interactive to boot. Kay, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you so much for having me.
And a reminder, if you liked something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Thanks again to our sponsor, 2020, your source for on-brand photography for your brand. Get 5 photos with 2020's 1-week free trial at 2020.com/onbrand. That's the word 20. Then the number 20.com/onbrand. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed on this episode, at branddrivendigital.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.